About 30 miles northwest of Portland, Oregon, lies a little town named Scappoose. Scappoose is Native American in origin and means gravelly plain. It hugs the Multnomah Channel, an offshoot of the Great Columbia River from the north, joining up with the Willamette River on the south. It was in that gentle place that James Niblock, himself a gentleman and a gentleman, was born on the 1st of November in 1917. It was the same year, about 6 months earlier, that the U.S. formally entered the First World War. Though Jim Niblock was too young to remember World War I, the Second World War would be a formative experience for him, changing the direction of his life. I'm Jody Newell. Join us as we follow Jim Niblock's journey from Scappoose, Oregon to East Lansing, Michigan. Along the way, we'll celebrate and reflect on his first 100 years with some of his friends and colleagues from the MSU College of Music. Joining me at Dr. Niblock's East Lansing home were clarinet professor Elsa Verdere, violin professor Walter Verdere, Leon Gregorian, former director of orchestras and university distinguished professor emeritus, and composition professor emeritus, Jerry Hutchison. I began the conversation by noting the longevity of composers at the MSU College of Music, and that Dr. Niblock's former colleague, the renowned composer and professor emeritus H. Owen Reed, passed away in 2014 at the age of 103.
Owen Reed is one of the main reasons that I came here, and I knew him in Colorado. He and I were both students of Roy Harris, and I was living in the home of Roy Harris, and Owen would come there twice a week, and we would have lessons together. And so I knew Owen for a long time, and he is the one that notified me about the job here, but I had three job offers the year I came here. I had one at the University of Colorado, one at Stevens College, which is a very well-known girls' school, and one here at Michigan State. And I didn't know where to go. And so I went to Roy Harris, and I asked him where I should go. And he said, "Oh, by all means, go to Michigan State." So I decided to come here, and I'm glad I did.
And you've been here ever since.
I've been here ever since.
But we're jumping ahead of the story. Let's go back to Jim Niblock's childhood in Oregon, where his lifelong friendship began with a world-famous violinist. Walter Verdere begins the story.
Jim grew up as a close friend of Robert Mann, the founder of the Juilliard Quartet. How did that go? They came here and played a concert on our lecture concert series, and then you were in New York, and he invited you to his apartment.
Well, we had them here as quartet in residence.
I know you.
Before that. 10 years.
But before you arranged that, but you talked to Bobby Mann.
How did you start? I
knew Bobby Mann when we were youngsters.
Right.
He was in Portland, Oregon, and I was near Portland, 30 miles away, and we got well acquainted when he was in high school. You see, I was a couple of years ahead of him.
Right.
And I was studying in Portland still when he was in high school.
Uh-huh.
And so we knew each other very well. We were good friends all of our lives.
Right. And then you asked him in New York if he'd like to come, if the quartet would come be in residence at Michigan State, right?
That's right.
And that lasted 10 years, didn't it?
It lasted 10 years. And finally, William Schumann, I think, was the head of Juilliard. And he said that they had to quit. That is, they couldn't maintain a residency in Michigan State University and still be the Juilliard String Quartet.
And you arranged the MSU fight song for them.
Oh, I did. Right? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I did. They thought it sounded a little like Bartok, but that was okay.
Well, at the beginning, it's, you know, it does sound
like Bartok.
Exactly.
Some and snap pizzicato.
And then it gradually comes into the
fight song.
After high school, Jim attended nearby Washington State University, earning a Bachelor of Arts and a bachelor's degree in education. Then his country called during World War II, where he served in the Army Air Force, and it was in the waning days of the war that he began composing.
I didn't start composing until I was in the Army. I was a violinist up until the time that I went in the Army after I'd graduated.
Was that the Second World War?
That was the Second World War, and I was in the Army for 4 years. And after the atomic bomb, I was stationed in Amarillo, Texas, at the air base there. I was in the Army Air Force. And I had very little to do because everything gradually calmed down after the atomic bomb, because we knew that we were going to win the war, and so things were more or less subdued. And that's when I started to compose, when I had free time, and I used it composing.
After discovering his gift for composing in that unlikely place, Jim moved to Colorado Springs to pursue a master's degree at Colorado College. Two very big names in 20th century music just happened to be teaching there at the time: German composer Paul Hindemith, who had taken refuge in the U.S. during the war, and Roy Harris, an influential leader in the newly evolving American style of music that developed in the first half of the 20th century. Among his pupils were William Schumann, H. Owen Reed, and Peter Schickele, best known as the creator of P.D.Q. Bach, not to mention Jim Niblock, who lived in Roy Harris's home as a student.
He had a large house on Boulder Street, and he had three stories, and the third story was a single room with a bathroom, and that's where I lived, up on the third floor, and I enjoyed it. I lived there for almost 3 years.
Wow. There was also another famous composer you studied with at Colorado.
Well, Paul Hindemith. I had lessons with Hindemith. Hindemith had a cottage up in the mountains near Colorado Springs, and nobody knew where it was, fortunately. But he came down twice a week and gave lectures at Colorado College. And there were seven of us that were in his class. And I enjoyed Hindemith very much. You know, when you wrote compositions for Hindemith, you had to write like Hindemith. Anything else was not acceptable. But I enjoyed very much working with him.
Following Colorado College, Jim went to the University of Iowa for his Ph.D. Then, as we heard earlier, when it came time for his first teaching job, Roy Harris recommended he accept an offer from Michigan State University.
I was hired as an assistant professor of composition, and Owen Reed was on a sabbatical. And he was gone the first year I was here. So I took Owen Reed's place that 1 year, and then the following year I was assigned teaching jobs in theory and undergraduate composition.
Years later, Jerry Hutchison reminisced about how Jim paid tribute to his friend H. Owen Reed upon his retirement.
Remember when Owen Reed retired and you came out on stage in Fairchild and a plaid shirt and blue jeans and some hoedown music?
Yeah.
Well, not everyone could do that unless they had tried it and done it. He could do anything.
Yeah. You know.
And did you play his Missouri Shindig?
Oh, yeah.
Niblock began his tenure at MSU in 1948. 15 years later, he became chairman of what was then the Department of Music. His first faculty hire was clarinetist Elsa Ludewig in 1963.
You hired me in 63 after my first year here.
Yeah.
And you've always said that I was the first person you hired.
You were.
So I'm going to hold you to that.
Each of the faculty gathered in Jim Niblock's home had a story about the influence Jim had on their coming to MSU. Jerry Hutchison was just graduating from MSU with his doctorate in 1965 when Niblock hired him full-time and put him right to work.
The summer that I was hired, Jim was working on a textbook which was in a series of educational textbooks published by Allein and Bacon that William Sir had begun, and you had contracted to do a book on choral music for high school chorus.
Yeah.
And I guess it had been sitting and sitting and sitting, and you asked if I'd come in and help you work on it, be a co-author. So we finished it that summer
that's
of 65.
Right.
We worked like crazy, finished it, and it came out in 67.
Yeah.
So that was fun. So we worked pretty closely together on that. We commissioned pieces. It had a lot of original compositions in it. And we wrote texts explaining the pieces and the different periods. And it was a nice book, very colorful book.
Did you write the compositions, both of you? Or?
Yeah.
Well, we
had some original compositions in there. Yeah.
Who else was in the book?
Oh, well, Beethoven and Mozart.
Oh,
the commissions, we asked a lot of our people we knew, like Wallace DePue and others. We wrote a few pieces ourselves. We just tried to write pieces that were would be fun for high school kids.
Yeah.
One piece I wrote called His Twist Little Ghost Things on a text by E.E. Cummings is still selling, the best seller I've got. That piece has done really well. Thank you.
Violin professor Walter Verdier was still a graduate student at Juilliard when Jim came up with a creative offer to entice him to come to East Lansing.
Dr. LeBlanc hired me in 1968 when I came here and auditioned. And then I went back to Juilliard. I was working on my doctorate. And then I thought about it, and I thought, well, maybe I'm making a mistake to leave school before I finish the doctorate. And so I don't know if you remember this, but I wrote to you and I said, well, I'm not sure because I want to finish the doctorate that I should come. He came back and he said, well, what about if you commute to Juilliard while during your first teaching year?
That's what you did.
That's what I did. Yeah. Yes, I flew to Juilliard every week and then finished it at the end of the year. But anyway,
did he pick up the tab for the airfare?
No, I had to pay that myself.
In addition to being chairman of the MSU Department of Music, Jim Niblock was a matchmaker. Before long, Walter and Elsa were making beautiful music together.
I met Elsa and we enjoyed playing the Mozart Quintet together at the beginning. And
also going to the Boom Boom Room. You remember
yes.
the Boom Boom
oh,
Room?
Oh, God, yes.
Yes, and so once I got there, we always practiced late at night. And in those days, we were the only ones. So then we said, well, why don't we go have a drink at the Boom Boom Room? In Brando, which no longer exists. And so one thing led to another. And so 3 years later, we got married.
What year did you get married?
In 71.
He called me and told me they were gonna get married. And I was surprised and I didn't know what to say. I don't think I said anything.
I don't know. I'm sure you were pleased.
I guess I have to know, why were you surprised?
Well, I didn't even know they were going together. And he said they were going to get married, and I was stunned.
Well, it was those late nights at the Boom Boom Room.
Elsa and Walter not only became marriage partners, but also formed the Verdier Trio. The trio has commissioned works from some 125 contemporary composers, including several works by James Niblock. Here's Elsa talking about a piece he wrote called Terzina, and how that ties in with his opera Ruth, based on the biblical characters of Ruth and Naomi.
And I have to say one other thing while I'm thinking of Jim, and here he is right across from me, about his music, because we played a lot of pieces of his. He wrote quite a bit for our trio. And there's nobody that writes a more beautiful melody. You just, when you listen to his pieces, some of those slow movements can tear your heart out. And I want to say that once, and particularly Terzina. which then you took my clarinet melody and you made it into a vocal solo in one of your operas, but I guess it's okay because I got it first. So anyway, I always feel like...
Yeah, I used the tune that I wrote for you in the opera.
That's right.
Nothing more.
Leon Gregorian, who led the MSU Symphony Orchestra for nearly three decades, was also convinced to come to MSU, but at an earlier stage in his life.
I remember applying to several schools, including Indiana, Michigan, and Michigan State, which I knew least about. But my only request was, and I wrote a letter to you, because at that time you wrote to the director, that I would study with Lubashutz and Nemanoff. I wrote this, pretty much the same letter to Indiana and Michigan, and I was happy that I was accepted at all three places, but they wrote me a postcard saying that you're accepted. No response as far as who I would be studying with. And when I would call and say, well, we don't make that decision till we the beginning of the year. He wrote me a personal letter that you will study with Lubashutz and Nemanoff, and we will welcome you with assistantship and so on. I mean, how can you turn that down? You know?
The personal touch.
History. Yeah, yeah.
Leon Gregorian later came back to MSU as a professor, and many years later organized an MSU Symphony Orchestra program to celebrate Jim Niblock's 90th birthday in 2007. That program included several Niblock works, including the Concerto No. 2 for violin, clarinet, and orchestra, written for Walter and Elsa Verdaere.
Thank you. Thank you.
portion of James Niblock's Concerto No. 2 for violin, clarinet, and orchestra in a performance by violinist Walter Verdaere, clarinetist Elsa Verdaere, and the MSU Symphony Orchestra, led by Leon Gregorian, from a 90th birthday celebration for James Niblock in November of 2007 at MSU's Wharton Center. Jim Niblock marks his centennial on November 1, 2017. This hour is a collection of memories and music celebrating the Chairman Emeritus of the then MSU Department of Music. Our guests include Walter and Elsa Verdaere, Leon Gregorian, and Jerry Hutchison. And of course, the guest of honor, James Niblock. I'm Jody Knoll. Gene Fickett's 2003 doctoral dissertation contains some interesting facts about Dr. Niblock's era as leader of the department. She writes, "During Niblock's tenure, the old practice building, which at one time had served as a women's dormitory, was razed. The current music practice building, with a lecture hall, 4 classrooms, 62 practice rooms, 68 offices and studios, a music therapy facility, and an electronic music studio, was built in 1969. In 1963, the music department enrollment was 329. Enrollment peaked in 1973 with over 700 students, 300 of whom were in music education. The number of graduate assistants increased from 18 to 56, courses in jazz and popular music were added, and an electronic music laboratory for composing and teaching was established." Jim Niblock accomplished a lot in those years from 1963 to 1978, but the consensus of his former employees gathered for this program was how much he cared for faculty and students and how much they cared for him.
You know, I want to say something that while a student here, I noticed that Jim would come to all the concerts, even student concerts.
Yeah.
He would leave, was the first one to come backstage, congratulate you, and leave. I mean, this is unheard of.
Yeah.
Every concert he came, whether you're a faculty member or a student, good or bad, you know, he came
as a number of receptions.
And the support that you received very silently was amazing. Mm-hmm. And then also the other thing that was, you know, was important to me was it was really a calm place to be at. Mm-hmm. You know, with all the war going on and so on, all the demonstrations and so on, it was a very calm place in the music building. And that was because of him, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was almost no infighting among the faculty.
Yes.
People who came here couldn't believe it.
They
said, you guys get along so well.
It really is true. Mm-hmm.
You always had time for students, always, you know. And so, with some of the things that we thought was really big thing, it really wasn't. But he took time to listen to us. You know, makes an impression on you.
One of my favorite stories about Jim, I was at one of my early faculty meetings. Let's see, when would it have been? Well, after my first 10 years.
Yeah.
Because Jim had been chairman during that 10-year period. And one day at a faculty meeting, he announced that he wanted to stop being chairman and he wanted just to go back to teaching. And some of people who are listening, and some of you will remember Gomer Jones, who was... how can we describe Gomer? Give me a good adjective.
Colorful,
energetic.
A character, right.
He was a history teacher as well as a conductor.
And highly respected.
Right. Yeah. So he said, "Wait a minute, Jim," and that's exactly what he said. "Wait a minute, Jim, let us talk this over." He said, "Would you step out of the room, please?" So Jim stepped out, and Gomer said, "Do we want Jim to stop being the department chairman?" Everyone said a resounding no. And I mean, it was no. No one said anything else. And so he went and got Jim and said, "Jim, you're staying another 5 years." And you said, "Okay." I always remember. That was just really one of my most memorable moments of the whole time. Well, that was the best faculty meeting I ever went to. I'll say that.
Jim Niblock was also involved at the very beginning of the Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp, joining the board in 1967.
Well, I've been associated with Blue Lake for 50 years.
That's right. And Fritz Stanzel, the president and founder, always gives you credit for the
Keeping it going, initiating it, and yeah, helping to,
that's right,
you know, raise the standards.
And that year, the second year of the Blue Lake Pine Art Camp, 50 years ago, I came on the board. And I'm the oldest member of the board, other than Fritz and Gretchen. I'm the oldest.
But you're still on the board.
Right? I'm still.
And didn't you conduct as late as last summer?
I conducted the orchestra at Blue Lake, but I've always conducted the opera. And the opera started about, about 15 years ago, I guess. We do two performances each of the four terms, and on Friday and Saturday night. I enjoy conducting opera, and...
And last summer you did Impresario of Mozart.
Oh. Impresario.
And this...
I understand you're going to do an opera next summer, too.
You're going to do one of your operas next summer.
I'm going to do...
Ruth?
Ruth and Naomi. If I can do it one more time, it'll probably be my last... opera performances at Blue Lake.
Then Jerry Hutcheson had one more story to tell.
You know, Jim, you were one of the best joke tellers and storytellers I've ever heard. Remember when you were about 90 and we were at Jim Forger's house and you had been to visit one of the older deans? What was his name?
Dean Mulder.
Mulder. And he was 99 and in a rest home, and you had just come from there.
Oh, yeah.
And you tell that story.
That's a good one.
You ask him how he was doing, and then he asked you, well, how old are you, Jim? And you said, 90. And you said, he said, oh, to be 90 again.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Any final thoughts, Dr. Niblock?
I've enjoyed immensely all the years that I've spent at Michigan State, including my retirement years, because I continued musical activity after I retired. I've always had a great faculty, some of whom I hired, and it's made it really a great pleasure for me to be department chairman here and be on the faculty here and to know all these people.
We've had a great relationship now for about 60 or 70 years. So I've thought MSU was the place for me, and a lot of it's thanks to you, Jim.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I already said what I thought, what a wonderful atmosphere you created during headship.
Yeah.
And it was such a wonderful time. As you said, it was a peaceful time, even though it was during the 60s and afterwards. We still enjoyed, I don't know, just being able to really do that which we did as well as possible because of your leadership.
Jim Niblock has been a great friend and support to me and to my wife all through my tenure here at Michigan State, which is almost 50 years. Yeah. He hired me in 68 and was very welcoming. So anyway, it's been a great time. So happy birthday.
Be grateful.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm Jody Knoll. Thank you for listening to this hour devoted to memories and music of Dr. James Niblock as he celebrates his 100th birthday. Joining me for the conversation were Walter and Elsa Verdere, Leon Gregorian, and Jerry Hutchison. Jim Niblock, birthday boy, was the guest of honor. The recording of the Juilliard Quartet playing James Niblock's arrangement of the MSU fight song was courtesy of the G. Robert Vincent Voice Library at the MSU Library. Thanks for listening. This is a production of WKAR Radio, a division of MSU's College of Communication Arts and Sciences. This is Michigan State University Radio.